It's Monday, the 22nd of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Rajon Rondo and Lord Alfred Payton. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Jameson420. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Jameson420, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the podcast for one day. So thank you to Jameson, and thank you to everyone else who's done that over the course of the season. The number of reviews that have come in have been fantastic, and they still continue to come in, and I can't say enough how thankful I am and how much they do help the show grow. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far. We've got a fair bit of interesting stuff to talk about today. A few rotation changes in the NBA, some huge performances, some bad performances as per usual. So
let's get to it.
I sure will. Okay, let's look at the Facebook and Instagram contests for today. On Facebook, we're looking for Julius Randle, combined points and rebounds. And I made a quip yesterday saying, oh, we might as well say steals and blocks as well, because he'll get zero of those. Well, he did. He got zero of those. But the total points and rebounds combined was 34. And Rob Percher, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Maybe Percher? Percher. We'll go with Percher. Rob Percher. Got that one correct. He is a massive participant in the Facebook contest. He's pretty much submitting a guess every day. So thank you, Rob. And today you got it spot on with Julius Randle getting 34 combined points and rebounds. On Instagram, we were looking at Jared Sullinger. How many combined points, rebounds, steals, and blocks? And he put in a bit of a Julius Randle in that he had no steals and blocks. He had 27 combined points and rebounds. No one got that one right. For Monday's Instagram contest, we're looking at Reggie Jackson combined points and assists. And on Facebook, we're looking at Isaiah Thomas combined points and steals. So make sure you're following on Instagram at redrock_bball and facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Leave your guess for those when the posts go up, and tag one of your mates as well. Okay, let's get into the daily awards from Sunday's action. There was I'm pretty sure you know who the monstrous line of the night is. If you look over my right shoulder over here, if you're watching on the video, you can see the nice Anthony Davis jersey hanging up there. It was always going to be Anthony Davis. Nobody was going to do anything to be able to get close to that sort of line. In the first game of the night, Anthony Davis played 43 minutes, so he got a fair bit of run, but 59 points. That is obviously a career high for him. 20 rebounds, huge. He added two triples. He had four assists. He had one block. And the biggest part of his value, the 59 points is good, but the fact that he went 24 from 34 from the field for a field goal percentage of 71 on 34 attempts, that is massively impactful. And we look at Z scores and stuff like that. For the points, his Z score was 8.9. For the field goal percentage, 15.6. So you're looking at almost double the value of him in the field goal percentage category. So that could have easily... 59 points is pretty handy to swing the points category, especially on a Sunday. But that could have jumped up your entire week's field goal percentage up by maybe 1%, maybe 1.5%. Enough for it to really swing a contest. He was also 9 of 10 from the free throw line as well. So, you know, overall, one of the best lines of the season for Davis. And you see plenty of places, and I always frequent message boards about fantasy basketball and all that sort of stuff, and talking about Davis being the biggest bust of the season. Seriously, he's the fifth overall ranked player. He's averaging 24 and 10. He's hitting half a three, getting you 2.2 blocks and 1.3 steals on 50 and 75% shooting. That is not the biggest bust of the season. You picked him at one, and he's fifth. Big shit. It doesn't really look, it is a bit of a drop off, definitely, and it's a drop off from his overall value from last season, but it doesn't cost you the season. It doesn't do anything like that. It's when you draft a first round guy and they finish 30th. That's where it's a problem. Not if you draft them first and they come fifth, or fifth and they're ninth, or anything like that. His season has not lived up, you know, to his lofty expectations, and a lot of that's due to mainly his percentages dropping. He's gone from 54 down to 50. and from 81 down to 75. They're significant drops. If they go back up, we're talking about a guy that's pretty comfortably a top three player. But to say that he's the biggest bust of the season is ludicrous. And people talking about, I'm going to be able to, I'll draft him at the end of the first round next year. Yes, there is the issue with him missing games, and he has missed some games, but it hasn't been many. It's a handful of games. He's had to leave a couple early, and I understand all the concerns with that. But his overall actual form has been almost exactly the same as last year. His points are identical. His rebounds, identical. His assists, basically identical. His steals, slightly lower. He's added half a three. His blocks are a bit down. There are slight changes, but overall, he's still pretty bloody good. And I don't know that you can have massive amounts to complain about with Davis. Yes, the injury concern is something real, but I've had rants in the past about talking about people being injury prone and pussies and all this sort of stuff. Does my head in. Can't deal with it. He is he's going to be a really, really good player. He's going to be a great player. Dealing with a whole bunch of hurt teammates, a new coach, I think we're going to see a pretty big second half of the season from Anthony Davis. Hopefully anyway, because when you can do stuff like this, it's obviously pretty fun if you own him. Speaking of impatience, which I wasn't really, but I sort of was, the waiver wire line of the night and the young gun of the night goes to a Denver Nuggets player. As you can see over my left shoulder, I've got my Denver Nuggets jersey there. Not the player who it was, because I don't have myself a Nikola Jokic jersey just yet, but he was incredible. 30 minutes, 23-13. He had a three-pointer, four assists, and two steals on 10 of 15 shooting. Now, he's the waiver wire line of the night because he's owned in only 55% of leagues, and that number has gone down recently because everyone's really quick to drop him. Oh, he played 4 minutes. Drop. Do I drop him? Just have a bit of patience. There's a lot of these situations recently where he got into early foul trouble, he was getting dominated against DeMarcus Cousins, he was dealing with an illness, he was dealing with a sore shoulder. He is the number one choice of Mike Malone on most nights. Now, there's going to be some nights where Malone goes, okay, Nurkic is feeling it, or Joffrey Lavernier is pulling a game out of his ass, or something like that is going to happen. But in general, Nikola Jokic is the center in Denver. He is a top 90, he's a top 100 player in less than 20 minutes a game this season. That's how good he can be from a statistical point of view. Play him 30 minutes a night and we're easily in the top 50. He shouldn't have been dropped by anyone. I know that he was dropped in plenty of places. Everywhere I owned him, I held on to him. And I suggest you go and have a look on your waiver wire to see if he's there. There's going to be some ups and downs. Definitely. They're going to be maybe not as big of a down as a 3-minute 40 game with four fouls. That might not happen all that often. But Nikola Jokic has tremendous fantasy talent. Mike Malone likes him the most out of all those centers. He is playing... In general, if the opportunity is there, he's going to play the most minutes. He is going to be the first choice guy there, ahead of Nurkic, ahead of Lavernier. And that means something. Yes, you're going to have to put up with some poor nights, but remember, in less than 20 minutes a night this season, he is a top 100 player. So even if he plays 20 minutes a night, he is still going to give you value. If he plays 30 minutes a night, through the roof. Don't be so quick or so keen to drop guys because of explainable situations, which is what happened with Nurkic in the last game. If something, you look at a box score and you go, oh, Jokic, 4 minutes, why? Surely that your first thought should be why. And if it's not, you need to train yourself into why did he play 4 minutes? Let's look into it. Ask me. Ask someone else on Twitter. Ask Kyle. Ask Matt. Ask one of these guys, why did he play 4 minutes? And plenty of you do that, and it's great because... it might be a case of fouls. He might have got injured. He might have got an ejection that caused him to play 4 minutes. It's not just a case of, oh, Malone doesn't like this guy anymore. He's out of the rotation. People are very quick to make decisions on things. And sometimes you have to be quick, but you also have to look at the long-term trends of a lot of things. And Jokic's trend is, it's trending fairly positively to me. And he should be owned in all standard leagues. The dud of the night, maybe a little bit unfair to give it to Kyrie Irving considering he was sick, but as I always say, you're on the last day of your matchup. That's a game played. That's a waste. In a roto league, you've got 82 games. That's a game wasted. 9 minutes for Kyrie, 2 points, one rebound, and one assist. He was feeling ill. He had a stomach flu, apparently, which I read somewhere, which I absolutely despise that term. It's there's no such thing as a stomach flu. He had a stomach virus. He had gastroenteritis, but he didn't have a stomach flu. Hate that term. Absolutely despise it. But anyway, Irving was sick. He was shitting his pants. He was vomiting. Whatever. There was something wrong with him. He didn't play. we know who he is. He's a guy that I'd be trying to aggressively trade for if people aren't really switched on to the sort of value that he can have. He does have top 20 value towards the end of the season here, I think. So see if you can get him. If someone's a little bit, oh, Kyrie, injured again. Not that this is an injury, but you know, again, the psychology comes into it. People have that mindset. Go and see if you can get him. And I reckon you can get him at a relatively cheap deal, or cheaper than what he's actually worth. Speaking of cheap, I want to get everyone's thoughts. I made, you're all going to be excited, I made my first trade this season. I made one in the preseason in the Dynasty League, the Red Rock Dynasty League. Made my second trade today in the Red Rock Dynasty League. We've got contracts and salaries and contract length and all that sort of thing. I had Marcin Gortat on an expiring $30 contract. I traded him for Brook Lopez on a 3-year $40 contract and got a third round draft choice out of it. Interesting to know what people's thoughts are. I know some people don't like it. I know I messaged Matt today about it, and he was like that I should be locked up for insanity for taking on Brook Lopez for 3 years at $40. But overall, I'm pretty happy with getting that deal. So Simon, I thank you for negotiating with me in that trade. I'm pretty happy to get Brook Lopez for the next 3 seasons, and you get some salary cap relief as well. So that's a great thing about dynasties as well, is you can get lots of trades working out for both teams. Simon gets out of a contract and he can be a more active player in free agency, and I get to lock up a guy who fits my punt build really well, as Gortat didn't quite do that. He was a guy that I drafted just so I could have a center, but he's not the center that I really needed. So interesting to hear your thoughts on my trade there, considering it is the first one that I've executed this season. All right, it's time for a quick word from one of our sponsors. Today's presenting sponsor, which is SeatGeek. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? I'm sure you have. Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek's a great place for me to go and have a look and look at NBA tickets and see, okay, well, what's the price here? Like, I know my brother, I've mentioned before, he's over in San Francisco. He's been going to Warriors games. I can see the tickets that he's going to see. When I go over to visit him, I'm going to be using SeatGeek to get my tickets for the NBA, because I know that they're going to have the best value. SeatGeek takes all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code REDROCK, one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app today and get your $20. Very, very straightforward, and I'm sure many of you guys would be living in cities where there's NBA games, not just NBA games, lots of other sporting events as well. So make sure you're checking out SeatGeek, supporting the podcast, and getting $20 off. It's a win-win-win for everybody. Now, let's get into these games and look at them in a little bit of extra detail. The 10 games from Sunday, I'll bring that up on the screen for you guys watching along on video. There we go. And let's start getting stuck into them. The first one was the New Orleans Pelicans and the Detroit Pistons. Big win for the Pelicans, of course, led by Anthony Davis, but Jrue Holiday was enormous as well. He played 32 minutes off the bench, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists. He's really, really good. I don't think there's anything else I need to say about Jrue Holiday. He's an underappreciated player. The injuries have been a real pain in the ass for both him, well, not both, for him, the Pelicans, and everyone who enjoys watching good players play, because he is a very talented player, and it's always great to see him be able to break those shackles a little bit, which he's doing at the moment. So good on you, Jrue Holiday, the starter at point guard for the Pelicans, the worst NBA player in the league. Norris Cole played 21 minutes. He is putrid. 5-2-3 for Cole. It's really tough to own him. Yes, the minutes were there, but he's barely cracked 30 minutes over the last 4 or 5 games. His production is woeful. He is not a must-own 12. I would rather stream that spot than own Norris Cole at this point. He's just not a good player. And Eric Gordon is set to come back pretty soon. that's going to take some of that value away from Cole, and not that he had much value to begin with. Bryce DeJean-Jones, who started at the two, he'll go back to the bench, we would hope, when Gordon returns. He played 21 minutes, 5-3-2 with a triple. He's a deep, deep league guy only. And really, the rest of the Pelicans, not one other person apart from Holiday and Davis scored in double digits. Ryan Anderson had 6 points on 1 of 12 shooting. To me, he is incredibly overrated as a fantasy player. Incredibly. That's not a good night from him. Dante Cunningham started, played 24 minutes and didn't do a huge amount. Omer Asik only lasted 7 minutes before leaving with an ankle sprain. He had 5 points and a rebound. And that meant we saw Kendrick Perkins into the lineup. He played 7 minutes for 3 rebounds. Alonzo G also threw his hat into the ring into who can do the least with the most. 27 minutes for 0 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists. They're pretty lucky that Davis was playing because they got absolutely nothing out of anyone else on this team. On to the Pistons. Reggie Jackson, he'd been a little bit quiet lately, but that's a big game from him. 34 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 triples. And that's from a guy who's not a noted 3-point shooter, so good for him to get those 4 triples. The assist number's nowhere near as high as what they were last year for Jackson, but still he's putting up nice numbers. Big, big game from Andre Drummond. 21 and 14 in 35 minutes, 2 steals and 3 blocks on 9 of 13 shooting. 3 of 10 from the free throw line. I've been getting an inordinate amount of questions about Andre Drummond in dynasty leagues recently. Should I trade Drummond for this person? Should I do this? And had another one come through today. I don't know why I'm getting so many Andre Drummond dynasty trade questions, but if you're punting free throws, and if you own Andre Drummond, you are punting free throws. He's a top 5 player. You have to treat him that way. Yes, I know he handcuffs you into a punt free throw strategy, but you're there. You've got yourself a top 5 player. Unless every other player on your team is like an 80% free throw shooter and they're all awesome at it and they're high volume. Not even that. If they're James Harden, the other person on your team, or Danilo Gallinari, then I'd go, okay, that's not a great fit. But he is that good. He can dictate your team's strategy because he's that high of a ranked player. He is a top 5 guy in a punt free throw strategy build. So before you start looking at trading him away, it means remaking what your team does, and it means you're losing a top 5 guy in that sort of value. Now, there's something to be said in Dynasty about having flexibility, but if you're just constantly having flexibility, how are you going to win? You need to sort of lock yourself down into some sort of strategy to win, whether that's, and it's probably going to be short term, and then you can move on from then, but just constantly maintaining flexibility means you're probably not going to be able to win, in my opinion. Anyway, just thought I'd mention that because I saw a lot of Andre Drummond questions coming my way. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 34 minutes, big game from him, 14-3, but it was the 2 triples and the 4 steals that were nice. You don't love that he went 4 of 15 from the field, but good to see him getting back into it. And Toby Harris played 35 minutes, 16-5-2 for Toby, 2 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He is going to be a second-half monster, I'm pretty confident. He got some extra run because Anthony Tolliver lasted just 8 minutes with a knee issue. Tolliver has already been ruled out of Monday's game. I think that seeing 35 minutes from Toby Harris is going to be close to the new norm. With Tolliver out, Marcus Morris only got 34 minutes. That's a good sign to me because he's really not that good. He's not a must-own fantasy guy. 2 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists in 34 minutes. And to be honest, he's a guy that is close to that do the least with the most. He plays a shitload of minutes, and he can't even crack the top 100. I don't even know if he's inside the top 150 for the season despite the amount of minutes that he's playing. Stan Johnson, probably not much hope for him in 12-team leagues. 22 minutes here, 6-8 with 2 assists in those 22 minutes. I reckon you can do a lot better than Stan Johnson in most standard leagues at the moment. And Steve Blake is locked into that backup point guard role. He played 17 minutes, had 5 assists, which can be valuable in your deeper league formats. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are smashing for the Cavs on the road at the Thunder. That's a big, big win for them. They were without Iman Shumpert, and then Kyrie left after 9 minutes. LeBron, he was fantastic. 25, 7, and 11, 3 steals and 2 triples, while Kevin Love went 29, 11, and 4 on very, very nice percentages for Love as well. Richard Jefferson stepped up in Shumpert and Irving's absence. 25 minutes for Jefferson, 15 and 6 with 3 triples. He is literally just a plug-and-play guy for 3-pointers in certain situations. That's about it. And Tristan Thompson played 36 minutes, and that's a very Tristan Thompson line. 14 and 14 with a block on 4 of 6 shooting, exactly what he gives you, rebounds and a decent field goal percentage. J.R. Smith hit all of his shots from 3, 5 triples for 15 points, not much else, but that's not the norm for Smith. He is a guy who can get some steals and assists, so don't think that he's not Nick Young. And Tim Mozgov, 18 minutes for 11 and 5. He's playing a little bit better lately, but it's definitely not something that we need to be too overly excited about, especially if you're in a standard league. Now, with Irving out, with Shumpert out, Matthew Dellavedova played 29 minutes. He only had 2 points, but he dished 7 assists. If Irving and Shumpert happen to miss the next game, Dellavedova is a nice stream option. But otherwise, he's been playing less than 20 minutes in most of the games under Tyronn Lue. So there's any sort of back-end 12-team league value he may have had before has definitely evaporated. For the Thunder, KD went 26-5-3, had 3 blocks and 4 triples, while Russ Westbrook went 29-11 with a 3 and a steal. So big games from both of those guys, as per usual. Serge Ibaka blocked a couple of shots, had 2 steals, 12-3. Not a bad night, but he's still one of the more underperforming players this year. And Steve Adams played 28 minutes and went 9-9 with a couple of blocks. He is a borderline 12-team league guy for me, but you can probably do better in most situations. Campaign again showed his ability to put up fantasy stats in limited run. Only 10 minutes, but 6 points, an assist, and 2 steals is still relatively valuable. And Enes Kanter only 5-4 in his 18 minutes. He is very hard to own in 12-team leagues. Dion Waiters, let's check on what he did. He played 33 minutes and had 4 points, 3 rebounds and 2 assists. You need to be pretty deep to be considering Dion Waiters. And Randy Foy made his Thunder debut, played 14 minutes for 2 points and an assist. He is not going to be on really many fantasy radars. The San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns, no Kawhi, still dealing with that calf problem. It's not a long-term thing, thankfully. Danny Green had a very, very good game. 11-7-2, but he had a triple, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. It's as Danny Green as they come. A couple of blips recently, but he should be owned in most 12-team formats. LaMarcus Aldridge went 19-10 with a steal and a block. And with Kawhi out, we saw Kyle Anderson start and play another 29 minutes. Not quite as successful as he was on Saturday. 5-3-2 with a steal and a block. But Rasul Butler with 26 minutes, 12-6 and 3 steals. He chimed in. It's really pretty much impossible to get any sort of read on what the Spurs are going to do in that sort of sense. So I don't think there's any ads if Leonard happens to miss much time. Patty Mills would be the guy, actually. Patty Mills had 21 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists in 23 minutes. He has been playing exceptionally well lately. He is a guy you can stream in for 12-team leagues and see how it runs. He had 6 triples today. He's playing this sort of hot streak at the moment. And we've seen him do it before down the stretch, really put up some big, big numbers. Tony Parker, 22 points in his 27 minutes, and Tim Duncan played just 17 in the start. So I feel a little bit better after telling people I'm not sure that Tim Duncan is a 12-team league guy. Then he went out and put up a big double-double. This is the problem with Duncan at the moment. It's a problem that people have been saying is happening for Duncan for the last 3 years. It hasn't been happening, but it is starting to definitely occur now. And that is his minutes get reduced, his games played get reduced, and it's definitely impacting him at the moment. Now, the Suns are an absolute mess still. Look, they competed in this one, but in terms of figuring out their rotation, your guess is as good as mine. A couple of interesting things happened here. Tyson Chandler didn't play. Alex Len did. And I know it's probably going to shock you, but he's actually good. He played well. He is good. Cool. 24 minutes for Len, 23-13. Not much else on the stat sheet, but he can be a shot blocker. He's a guy that I think has to be owned in all leagues. And I mentioned this the other day. Interesting to see what they do when Chandler comes back as to how they deploy Len, if everyone's healthy. But to me, he's the most talented guy in that front court by a long stretch. And I really think they need to be trying to develop him and get him to work with guys like Devin Booker. John Lua had the one start. He went to the bench and played 18 minutes. Earl Watson does not like John Lua, I'm pretty confident, but Lua produced. In 18 minutes, he went 13-7, had a triple one as well. Some of that comes because he shot 5 of 7. If I added Lua, I'm not in a rush to drop him. I want to see what pans out in the next game, but it's unlikely he's going to be able to put up that sort of a line if he continues to only get 18 minutes. And he only got 18 minutes, and that's a game where Chandler is out too, so that is a little bit worrying. Mirza Teletovic played 29 minutes, 14-4-3 with 3 triples. He's just a points and threes guy. That's about all he's going to be able to give you. And Chris Humphries is the guy who actually replaced John Lua in the starting lineup. He went 7-3-4 with a 3 and a steal. Not quite the same game that he had the other day. But still, not bad from Humphries. Now, when Chandler comes back, he is going to lose some minutes. I'm definitely not rushing to go and add Chris Humphries. The Suns also made a change at point guard. Archie Goodwin, who'd been playing massive, massive amounts of minutes at point guard, was benched. And my old favorite, Ronnie Price, back starting for an NBA team in the year 2016 AD. It happened again. Price started, played 20 minutes, and went 11-1-3 with a block and a three. I'm not adding Ronnie Price, except if I'm in a 16-team league. What I am doing with Archie Goodwin is getting worried. 24 minutes for him here. He didn't play a single minute at point guard. He played only exclusively behind Devin Booker. And there's a little bit of a concern there in itself that Devin Booker only played 24 minutes. But Goodwin, if he's going to play in a bench role, and Watson was pretty clear saying that he wants to have a point guard on the court at all times, and he didn't play Goodwin at point guard at all. He doesn't consider him a point guard. And that's fair enough because he's not really a point guard. But he'd been filling in admirably. I don't think that his run in 12-team leagues is done. Make an add on someone else. You might be able to squeeze a little bit more out of him, but I'd rather move on and try and get someone else before that opportunity disappears. Now, Phil Pressey played the most minutes at the point guards, 28 minutes for Pressey, 6, 2, and 5, including 3 blocks and a steal. I don't think the blocks are anything to get excited about. He can produce if he gets 30 minutes, but he's more of a 20-team league sort of player at the moment. And PJ Tucker had 30 minutes, 7 and 5. He's getting a little bit tough to hold on to for some reason. Not for some reason. The players are getting healthier. His minutes are coming down. And Devin Booker's minutes are also dropping. Now, he was bothered with fouls here. He only played 24 minutes and had 4 fouls. 10, 4, and 6 for Booker. With some pretty poor shooting. 3 of 9. He still has to be owned everywhere. He will bounce back. But the arrow is definitely pointing down on Devin Booker at the moment. You'd think it will bounce back at some point. But he's not great at this point. The next game, the Boston Celtics and the Denver Nuggets. Isaiah Thomas had a pretty big game. 22 points, 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 12 assists, 2 steals and a block, filling the box score in all categories. And he was assisted by quite a number of other players. Avery Bradley had 20 points with 3 triples. Marcus Smart had a big game. And it doesn't look that big when you look at 10 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, but adding 2 threes and 4 steals. That's why Marcus Smart, to me, is a guy you definitely want to be looking at 12-team leagues, because he can really help that steals category. He can aggressively rebound. He can hit threes as well, and he can help you in those areas. Just watch your percentages. Now, Jared Sullinger, after playing some pretty big minutes the last couple of games, only got 23, but it was still a productive 23 minutes. I don't know why he only got 23. 16, 11, and 5 in those 23 minutes, and some pretty nice 7 of 12 shooting. He has to be owned everywhere. And Jay Crowder went 13, 4, and 3 with 3 steals. Speaking of being owned everywhere, Evan Turner, 17, 9, and 5, a steal and a 3. Now, 6 of 8 shooting is not replicable for Turner. He's just not that sort of shooter. But he's been able to do so much lately, providing those out-of-position assists, decent scoring, nice rebounding. He should be owned in majority of 12-team formats. Amir Johnson can't crack 20 minutes. I don't think there's much point in owning him in 12-team leagues. He went 6 and 5 in 18 minutes, while Jonas Jerebko went 6 and 6. In 20 minutes. He played more than Johnson, and Johnson only had the 1 foul. Speaking of fouls, Tyler Zeller had 4 fouls in his 15 minutes. His little run as a 12-team speculative guy is done. On the Nuggets, Emmanuel Mudiay played 31 minutes, 18 and 5, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 triples. Jameer Nelson was still out with that wrist problem, and Gary Harris continues to just get big, big minutes. 38 for him, 14 points. He had 1 rebound, 2 assists, and 3 steals. I've been quite high on Harris this season. He's a top 70 player over the last month, and that's only scoring 11.7 points. But what he does is he's giving you 2 steals a game over that time frame. He's a 49% shooter. He's 86% from the free throw line, and he's hitting over a 3 a game as well. He's got definite scope to improve his 3-point shooting as well. He's a must-own to me when I say that I think the second half he's going to continue to get better, but his production puts him as a back-end-of-the-bench sort of player. He's always got to be in your consideration. Or do I add Gary Harris? Do I hold him? That sort of thing. DJ Augustine played 30 minutes here. 13, 3, and 4 with 2 triples. If DJ Augustine can play 30 minutes most nights, he is going to be useful. Now, I'm not sure that I trust it all that often. But Mudiay got 30. Gary Harris got 38. Augustine got 30. The Nuggets went very small because Ken Faried was dealing with an illness, so he was limited to 13 minutes. So some of that's to do with that. Will Barton also played 31 minutes. So it's not like any of the guards really missed out in any time. But with Nelson returning, whenever that is, with Faried dealing with the illness, and he'll likely be back, you know, probably the next game, I wouldn't imagine that Augustine's going to log 30 minutes many times moving forward. So it might be a little bit of, well, that looks interesting, but I don't know if it's going to be something that happens all that often. Yusuf Nurkic, 4-2 in 12 minutes, and Danilo Gallinari got to the line 10 times, only hit 7 of them, and finished with 17 points. Will Barton, not the greatest night from Will, 10-5-3, but 2 steals, a block, and a triple. Doesn't help when you shoot 2 of 12. He's been honestly a huge surprise this season, despite his recent drop-off in form. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Toronto Raptors. Vince Carter played 31 minutes. Again, it's the year 2016, and Vince Carter played 31 minutes. He had 16-7. He had 2 triples, an assist, and 2 steals. What is going on with Vince Carter? He's played pretty decent minutes lately. I think over 20 in about his last 4 or 5. Do you need to do anything with him? Probably not, but in his last 4 games, he's a top 150 player. If you're in a 16-team league, I'm grabbing Vince, but I don't imagine it lasts all that long. Lance Stephenson made his Memphis debut, 22 minutes off the bench, 16-3-2 with a steal. But remember in this one, Tony Allen was out, so that gave some extra run to Vince and maybe some extra run to Lance. Zach Randolph, 18-6 in 36 minutes. Mario Chalmers only played 19 minutes, but there was foul trouble involved then. So yeah, Chalmers you'd expect more at 26 or 27, and that would limit Vince as well. So the 30 minutes, 31 minutes from Carter, there's a lot of factors playing into that. Brandon Wright played 21 minutes. 2-2 with a block. Yeah, he's an okay guy. If you picked him up, I think you've got to stick with him for at least a week or so to see how he plays out. But I do have a lot of hesitancy with using him in fantasy leagues. Mike Conley went 8-5-4 in 35 minutes. Not a great night, but he took a lot of shots. They just didn't fall. PJ Hairston made his first start for his last team, basically transporting his Charlotte role across to Memphis. Started, played 16 minutes, did nothing. Maybe that's who he is in a career starter who does nothing. Matt Barnes, only 1 point for Barnes on 0 of 6 shooting. He did have 2 blocks and 7 rebounds. I am still sticking with him. And the explosion from Jermichael Green the other day looks like it's going to be as fake as what it was looking at the time. 20 minutes, 4-6 with a steal. He's probably not a 12-team league guy. For Toronto, Jonas Valanciunas, 2 games in a row over 30 minutes. Is it a miracle? Is it common sense? I guess we'll wait and see in the next one. 10-12 for Valanciunas with a steal and a block. Can't wait for him to get 30-plus consistently. Kyle Lowry played 40 minutes and went 18-4-7, and DeMar DeRozan had 21-5-3. So the usual suspects getting it done. Corey Joseph played 26 minutes and went 14-4 with a couple of triples. He's more of a 14-team league guy for me. And Patrick Patterson is continually getting close to 30 minutes. He played 30 here, 11-8 with 2 triples, but he's sort of a Mirza Teletovic half-strength sort of player. He's just a bit insipid. I'm not sure that he's a guy that I want for our 12-team formats. James Johnson and Luis Scola, they joined the sub-20-minute starters party. No use in either of those guys. And Terrence Ross in 9 points in his 27 minutes. He's not going to be making standard league owners get too excited. For the next game, which was Charlotte and Brooklyn, we saw Courtney Lee make his Charlotte debut. He started. He only played 21 minutes, going for 5-1-1. But I don't imagine that it will take him long to get to 28 minutes a game. But even in 28 minutes a game, he's not a 12-team league guy to me. Kemba Walker, 28-2-3, 2 steals and 4 triples. Red hot shooting, 11 of 18. And Nick Batum went 16-7-8 with 3 triples and a steal. Marvin Williams was big as well. 31 minutes for Marv. 9 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. While Al Jefferson had a big, big game off the bench. Now, he only played 24 minutes, but went 18-7 with no other stats. But he also shot 9 of 13. That's a little bit fluky in that sense. If a couple of those shots don't fall, he's at 12-7 and looks okay. To me, he's still not a guy that I'm falling over myself to get in 12-team leagues. You might look at it and go, oh, look, Cody Zeller only played 22 minutes, but there was foul trouble. He had 4 fouls in that 22 minutes. I still think they do like Zeller a lot. 10 points with 1 rebound for Zeller there. He's still a borderline 12-team league guy, but I think he's going to be continue to keep that starting role for a decent chunk of time. Jeremy Lamb played 16 minutes for 5 points, and Jeremy Lin got 31 minutes off the bench, 11-5-2 with a steal and a block. I am not buying into Lin playing 31 minutes moving forward. I think Lee takes 5 or 6 of those away from him on a more consistent basis. in the future, and that will probably render Lynn useless in standard leagues. On the Nets, my boy Brook Lopez, 16, 10, and 6 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, another big game, while Thad Young went 14, 8, and 5 with 3 steals, and Joe Johnson continues to get it done, 17, 3, and 3, 2 steals and a 3-pointer, another big night for Joe. He has to be owned everywhere. Unless he gets bought out and signs with a team like the Cavs, his role will be dramatically reduced. Don Sloan, 9, 2, and 2. I said that he is not a bad guy for a 12-team league point guard, but really his ceiling is pretty limited. You can own him, but I'm not tripping over myself to get him. And Shane Larkin had 6 points in his 21 minutes. Markel Brown back close to 20 minutes, which he'd been doing pre-All-Star break, but didn't do the first game after it. 12, 2, and 3 in 19 minutes. Wayne Ellington had 13 points in 22, and Bojan Bogdanovic had 3 points in 20. I don't think you can trust any of those guys in standard league formats. The next game, the Indiana Pacers and the Orlando Magic. The Pacers got the win. Monte Ellis, 21, 4, and 3, 2 steals, 5 triples. And that's a big game. And Jan Mahinmi turning into an animal. 14 and 9 for Mahinmi in 32 minutes. 2 steals and a block and 6 of 6 from the field. I've been saying it basically all season. Mahinmi has to be owned. Yes, there's a free throw issue with him, definitely. But he can do so many things. Rebounds, field goal percentage, he can get blocks, he gets steals. His scoring is up the last 2 games. He should be owned. So should Miles Turner, obviously. 12 and 8 with 3 blocks for Turner. And that sort of elite percentages, 56 and 100 from the free throw line, is one of the attractions of his game. CJ Miles played 13 minutes. He heard a pop in his calf. He should have been dropped already, but if he's going to get injured, and he gets injured a lot, he's a guy that clearly has to be dropped everywhere. Paul George, 24 and 6 in 36 minutes. That's a nice game, but a pretty inefficient performance. And George Hill was terribly inefficient, going 2 of 11 for 8, 7 and 7 with a steal and a block. Jordan Hill chimed in with a pretty nice double-double in only 16 minutes, 13 and 10, but the problem is there, it's 16 minutes, and Turner and Mahinmi are locked into those front court spots. So guys like Jordan Hill and Lavoie Allen are going to be fighting for the scraps, and it puts them into more 16-team league conversations. On the Magic, interesting. Brandon Jennings played 25 minutes. He went 12, 4, and 7 with 2 steals and 2 threes. Lord Alfred Payton played 23 minutes and went 4, 2, and 4 with 2 steals. It's not looking good for Lord Alfred. It is mind-bogglingly stupid from Scott Skiles, but that's pretty much the MO of a Skiles coach team. Do you add Jennings in a 12-team league? I'll be very much anti-adding Jennings now, but if Skiles wants to run him, there is some appeal there, but it's only 25 minutes. Is he going to go 12, 4, 4, and 7 in 25 minutes all the time? I'd say probably not. That's a really good output in only 25 minutes, but it's trending in his direction, so I don't mind. If I had Archie Goodwin, and I did this move today, I dropped Archie Goodwin and I added Brandon Jennings, just to see where this all pans out. But I'm not overly confident of him being like his top 70 guy moving forward or anything like that. Evan Fournier, 23, 1 and 2 with 3 triples. His role feels relatively secure until Skiles does something wrong. And Victor Oladipo, 17, 7 and 8 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. Really starting to look more like that guy who we predicted could be a top 20 guy to start the season. Aaron Gordon, just 30 minutes. Don't get your hopes up for too much more. This is, I think, who he's going to be. 10 and 11 with 4 assists and a steal. It's still productive, but the 35 minutes is not something I'm anticipating from him. And Nick Vucevic, 19 and 13 with no other stats. Ersan Ilyasova only played the 18 minutes here. And Mario Hezonja, disappointingly, only got 9 minutes, didn't put up any stats. I thought that maybe he'd be seeing some extra run. That's obviously not the case, and he can probably be restricted down to 16-team leagues at this point. Another point I want to mention, that people are going to drop Alfred Payton. It's going to happen. Someone tweeted at me today, do I drop Alfred Payton and add Aaron Brooks? I answered no. But that's the thought process on Alfred Payton. He is going to be dropped. Now, I'm not saying that you need to rush and grab him, but he is still starting for the time being. Let's see what happens. If someone drops him to go and add someone like Aaron Brooks, and I'm guessing that must be a pretty deep league, you might be able to, in a 16-team league, a 14-team league, grab Alfred Payton off the waiver wire. That would be a move that I'd be making very quickly. It might not pan out. He might go down to playing some stupidly low amount of minutes under Skiles. But just, again, I like to highlight these examples to show you the thought process that some of the people who own Alfred Payton have, and it's not going to be an isolated incident. There is going to be some droppage of him in lots of places. I know that in a 12-team league I'm in with Seth Klein, Seth dropped him today. I can't remember who he added off the top of my head, but he added Shelvin Mack. And I'm really considering, do I go on and make a claim on Payton in waivers? Because it's Skiles, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what he's going to do. And we know that Payton does, you know, before Jennings arrived, Payton was getting 31, 32 minutes a night and performing relatively well. He hasn't been great this season, absolutely. He can be dropped in 10-team leagues, I reckon. But just watch in the deeper leagues and just see who's around if he gets dropped, because people will make some undervaluations of him, I think. Philadelphia at Dallas. Jahlil Okafor started out the game absolutely on fire. He only finished with 31 points, but it's still good. 8 rebounds, a steal and a block, and some very healthy percentages. 12 of 19 from the field and 7 of 10 from the free throw line. Bob Cove, the minutes are a concern, but 25 minutes, 14 and 5 with 4 triples and a steal. That's enough to get you by. I'd still be holding onto him. Nerlens Noel battled foul trouble. He had 5 fouls in 19 minutes. He still got you a steal and a block and 5 rebounds, so not a complete waste, and it's good if a guy gets 19 minutes, he can still be a positive impact on your team, and that's exactly what Nerlens was there. Nick Stauskas is dealing with some leg issues. 20 minutes for him, 8 points with 2 triples. I think that he's just not good anymore, or he's just not good. And Ish Smith, probably his worst game of the season, 26 minutes, or at least his worst game in Philadelphia. 26 minutes, 3 points, 3 assists. They got Kendall Marshall 6 minutes. They played TJ McConnell 16 minutes. Isaiah Cannon played 27 minutes. Not worried too much about Smith, but he has been a little bit off of late. Jeremy Grant at 29 minutes, 4 and 5 with a steal and a block. He's such a up and down guy for me in standard leagues. I don't own him anywhere, and that's probably because I just don't trust his consistency. On the Mavericks, they were able to have a pretty nice offensive showing against the Sixers. Wes Matthews finally got cracking. 21, 3 and 2 with 3 triples. That's his first good game, and it feels like forever. I'm not thinking, yes, this means he's back. It is against the Sixers, so I'm not getting overly excited for him. Dirk went 18 and 7 with 5 triples, and Ray Felton played 29 minutes and went 10 and 4 with 3 steals and a block. A big game from Ray. Darren Williams, 15, 3 and 8 in 27 minutes. Remember, all the minutes here were pretty capped due to the blowout nature. Chandler Parsons, 15 and 4. JJ Barea, 12, 2 and 5. And Zaza Pachulia grabbed his 10 boards but only played 19 minutes. Devin Harris returned to action, so that was that's good if you're a Devin Harris fan, if those exist. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Chicago Bulls is the next game that's up. Byron Scott. D'Angelo Russell is now the starter for the rest of the season. I don't know why it took 3 months to decide that, but apparently he has now. And I don't want to go too Byron Scott rant heavy here, but why does he plan things out weeks in advance? I'll buy the All-Star break. Russell will be starting. Just start him. What's the difference? Play him 34 minutes. Play Lou Williams 25 minutes. How do you know in 3 weeks' time? I think in 3 weeks' time, Russell's going to be ready to start. Dipshit. 15, 2 and 6 for Russell with 2 triples and a steal. He has to be owned everywhere. Julius Randle had, as I mentioned, a very Julius Randle night. 22 and 12 with not much else. He played 32 minutes. He's going to be starting the rest of the season, as he should have been all season. And Jordan Clarkson, 29 and 4 with 2 triples. He is on a really hot streak at the moment. The guy you have to look at here is Brandon Bass, who played 27 minutes, went 13 and 7, had a steal and 2 blocks. He has been putting up pretty consistent minutes in the mid-20s to high 20s. In the last 2 weeks, he is a top 75 player, averaging 10 and 5 with 1.3 steals and 1.3 blocks. That all looks great, but it's on inflated shooting. He's at 65%, which is not massively above where he normally shoots, but it's still 10%, 11% over his season average. But the steals and the blocks are way above what he's ever done in his career. He has, in the last 5 seasons, he has never averaged a steal, and he's never averaged a block a game. And that's really bumping his value up. He's a short-term guy you might want to look at, but remember, it's fueled by things that are probably not going to be sustainable. Kobe had 22 points on 20 shots, had 4 rebounds and an assist, and Lou Williams in his bench role went 11-2. There's no real point to owning Lou Williams in 10-team leagues anymore, and I reckon even in a 12-team format, you can find better options if he's going to be playing the mid-20s minute role off the bench. For the Bulls, Etuan Moore, 24 points with 4 triples, 4 rebounds, 1 steal and 1 block on 10 of 14 shooting. He's going to continue to start while Butler is out. He's probably not going to be continue to be this good, but he has to be looked at in all your 14-team leagues, definitely, and maybe your 12-teamers. Pau Gasol went 21-7-5 with 5 blocks, a big night for him, and Derrick Rose continues to thrive without Jimmy Butler. 24-7-6, 8 of 15 shooting, and 8 of 8 from the free throw line. Mike Dunleavy, 25 minutes, he's getting back up there in the minutes now, 17 points, 2 threes and 2 assists. He's a 14-team league guy for me. That's a nice performance, but it's all inflated because they're playing the Lakers. Dougie McDermott had 16 points and nothing else. He's a stream option for points only. And Bob Portis, what did he do? He played 25 minutes, 17-7, 3 triples and 3 assists. Now, for the last month or so, I've been saying I don't think that Bob Portis has much standard league appeal. But for now, his minutes are creeping up and he's starting to look better. But in the last 3 games, he's averaging 12.5 and 8, 1.3 triples. That puts him ranked 116th. He's not awesome, but I don't mind owning him in 12-team leagues at the moment. Taj Gibson is being limited. 29 minutes here for Taj, 5, 8, and 4, but there was foul trouble involved. Mirotić is still 2 or 3 weeks away, as is Jimmy Butler. You might be able to get 2 or 3 solid weeks out of Portis. For me, he's still more of a 14-team league guy, and if you own him in a 12-team league, he's probably your worst or second worst player. But that can be okay. That can still be useful. So now he's sort of starting to come into his own. Aaron Brooks had a decent night in terms of assists, had 9 of them in 17 minutes. But really, not much more to get excited about with Brooksy. The last game of the night, the Utah Jazz and the Portland Trailblazers, Gordy Hayward, 21-5-3 with 4 steals, and Derek Favors went 22-8. Rudy Gobert, only 7 points and 8 rebounds, but 5 blocks is a nice performance. And Rod Hood went 18-3-2. But the big story in Utah is Shelvin Mack, who played 24 minutes and went 16-3-6 with a block. Trey Burke played 13 minutes. Hal Neto played 10 minutes. I'm all for going and adding Mack in 12-team leagues. I don't know if he's going to get 16-6 each night. He's definitely not going to shoot 7 of 11 from the field every night. That's not something that's going to happen. But if they're going to prefer him to those two guys, then sure. I don't know if 30 minutes is in his near future. I think this is probably around the sort of playing time that he gets. But sure, go and add him and let's see how it plays out. You might get yourself a top 120 guy. Not much else, I think, from the Jazz. Obviously, if you're owning Trey Burke in any 12-team leagues, you should have dropped him back in October. On the Blazers, CJ McCollum, big night, 31 points, 3 assists, 2 blocks, 1 steal, 4 triples, and Dame Lillard went 34-5 with 4 triples as well. But the big story in Portland is Mo Harkless, who continues to play really well. I've been on the Mo Harkless train for a while. It's just happening 2 years too late for me. 17-7 for him in 25 minutes, a steal and a 3. He should be owned in 12-team leagues. He is playing minutes well, definitely getting much, and sorry, let's try that sentence again because my English wasn't working. He's playing easily more than Myers Leonard, and this was a great opportunity for Leonard to get some extra run against a team that's playing Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert out there. But Harkless still got his extra run. I'm all for going and adding Harkless in a 12-team league. He is playing exceptionally well. The Blazers are flying with him in the lineup. Love it. Mace Plumlee, 9-9-6 with 2 steals and a block. I've probably been stubbornly holding onto him in a lot of places, but I still think he can have nice value on the right team. And El-Farouq Aminu, 2-6-3 with a steal and a block. Not convinced that he's a must-own player anymore. He just can't get really anything happening, really struggling. And Alan Crabb, speaking of struggling, he played 20 minutes for 3 points on 1 of 6 shooting. That is it for the games from Sunday. I'm going to take a quick break. Before we do that, it's going to be a quick word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk DFS for Monday. right, guys, let's get stuck straight into it with the DFS stuff for Monday. There are 7 games on. The first one of those is the Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers. To be honest, there's not many of these games that are massively great fantasy games. There's one in particular that looks pretty awesome, and that is the Lakers and Bucks, who we talk about later. But a lot of these other ones, the matchups aren't fantastic. A few issues, obviously, in Cleveland. Iman Shumpert, is he going to play? Mo Williams is doubtful with a knee, so I don't think we need Williams. We don't need to consider Williams playing. Channing Frye, is he going to make his Cleveland debut? We still don't know yet. But Kyrie Irving's the biggest one, who's still dealing with that illness that caused him to miss most of today's game. Is he going to play? If he doesn't, that obviously changes a lot of things in Cleveland. For Detroit, Anthony Tolliver has been ruled out already. And Donatas Montiunas, apparently there's still some issues with his back, and they might have to cancel that trade with the Rockets. So that's something to definitely watch out for. But if they have to cancel the trade based on his back, it doesn't look good for him for his career, to be honest, if his back has been lingering for so long. Let's keep our fingers crossed for Donatas. The point guards in this one, Reggie Jackson at 6,500. Massive outing today against the Pelicans, 43.8. Against the Cavs, he's got an opportunity to have a similar sort of production. He's only at 6,500. That's not expensive. Can he get to 30 points? 32 points? I think he's a pretty decent chance here. Kyrie, if he happens to play, at 7,700. You're pissed if you used him, obviously, on Sunday. But at 7,700 against the Pistons, I reckon that's not an exorbitant price at all. If Kyrie is out, Dele, he only put up 10 points today in 29 minutes, but he does have 30-point upside in 30 minutes. He can do that. He just won't do it all that often. But he's only priced at 3,900, so if he gets you 25 points, I reckon you'd be relatively happy. That's more of a tournament sort of look. At shooting guard, if Shumpert is out, we're going to see more J.R. Smith. He's priced at 5,100. Even though today he hit 5 triples and had 15 points, he only dropped 19 DFS points. He is definitely a tournament guy and not a cash game play. Same goes for Shumpert if he was to play. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,300. That salary just feels too high. Probably not a spot that I want to get too interested in. At the small forward position, love Toby Harris here. He's at 5,500. He is most likely going to start with Anthony Tolliver out. He dropped 30 today. He's at 5,500. That is not an expensive salary. 30 points should be what he is aiming for. Love him, love him, love him. 10,100 for LeBron. Can't hate that either. He is 50 points on most nights. He's averaging 49.5 across the last 5. His lowest score in those last 5 is 43 points. At 10,000, you know what you're going to get from LeBron. 4.5x feels like it's an almost guarantee. The Pistons have been relatively good at suppressing production from small forwards, but LeBron is almost the exception to that. Marcus Morris at 5,500. I'm definitely taking Toby Harris at that same salary. And Stan Johnson at 4,700. He needs to be under 4,000 for me to consider him in a tournament. He's just, the production has dropped. Tristan Thompson is at 5,100. He's been playing exceptionally well. 37-point average across his last 3. Had another 34 today. But the Pistons have been pretty good at stopping opposition power forwards and big men. Doesn't totally dissuade me from using him. He's only at 5,100, so he's not an expensive guy to have a look at. He can definitely be considered. Kevin Love at 7,200, a really strong performance today, obviously 48 points. He is a little bit up and down, but with a 36 average, a 30 average across his last 5 at 7,200, he's someone to definitely put into your player pool. The center position, the Cavs are pretty damaging against opposition centers, so I'm not sure that 8,400 for Drummond gets me overly excited. Tristan Thompson and Timofey Mozgov do a pretty good job of reducing the output from opposition centers. At 8,400, does he get to 43 points, 40 points? I think it might be a situation where we steer clear of Drummond. I can understand using him, but the matchup doesn't look all that appealing. The Toronto Raptors and the New York Knicks is the next one. The Raptors are favored by 4, and the total is 199.5 points. Injury-wise, no one. Thankfully, we really need to be too concerned about, so that's always a positive when that's the case. At point guard, Jose Calderon is at 4,200, but I don't care. I'm not using Jose Calderon against Kyle Lowry. I'm not using Jerian Grant either, but Kyle Lowry is the guy we have to look at. Now, the problem is Kyle Lowry is priced at 8,800. That is expensive. It's almost 9,000 for those of you who don't know numbers, which I'm sure is none of you. at 8,800, can he get to 45 points? Well, he's got an opportunity against Jose Calderon, definitely. I would be a bit concerning to use him in a cash game, but in a tournament, we know he can go for 50, for 55, and this matchup is not an overly difficult one. So he comes into consideration, not someone I'm overly hyped about. Corey Joseph at 4,100. Love the matchup, but he's just not a big producer, so I probably wouldn't get too excited there either. Aaron Aflalo at 4,900. Not for me. DeMar DeRozan, 8,200. I don't mind it. Again, it's sort of a Kyle Lowry situation. Is that, can you bank on him to get 40? Well, we know he can, but it's a bit of a stretch to think that he's going to get there at that salary, and it is a bit of a turnoff. Terrence Ross and Langston Galloway, maybe you'd throw him into a tournament. They do have 30-point upside. At small forward, Carmelo Anthony's been killing it lately. His price has risen. It's out 9,300. But he's averaging 48 across his last three, 45 across his last five. I think this is a pretty good spot for him to go for another 40, 42 points. So don't hate using him. Lance Thomas and James Johnson, they don't need to be really considered, even though they're both min salary. At power forward, we've got
percentages.
Now, will he get sat for having four fouls and not knowing how to play through fouls? We'll see. At 6,500. And the Raptors are really good and have been really good all season at restricting power forwards. Maybe not a great opportunity to use Kristaps, but I definitely don't hate it. 3,800 for Patrick Patterson. He has to be looked at. He's averaging 21 points across his last three. And at 3,800, if you get 22, 23 points out of Patrick Patterson, we're talking 5, 6x value out of him. And that's nothing to be sneezed at. Not looking at Luis Scola, he can't crack 20 minutes. With the centers, 5,800 for Robin Lopez. I really enjoy that. He's played big minutes under Kurt Rambis the last couple of games, averaging 30 across his last three at 5,800. You'd think that 30 is close to where he's going to get against Jonas Valanciunas. Valanciunas at 6,700, that feels too expensive against Lopez, who has been able to restrict centers fairly well so far this season. The next one is the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. Dwayne Wade is the big injury here. He's questionable. CJ Miles is questionable, but I would say he is more on the doubtful side of questionable. Wade, if he is out, we know what that does. Increased usage for Dragic, increased usage for Luol Deng. Dragic has been killing it at 6,200. Even if Wade plays at 6,200, I feel more comfortable using Dragic. He's averaging 34 across his last five, and some of those Wade has played. At 6,200, hasn't been priced out of it yet. George Hill at 6,000. I'd rather spend 200 extra on Dragic every day of the week. At shooting guard, do we look at Dwayne Wade if he happens to play? I'm going to say no. He's at 7,500. I'd put Gerald Green into a tournament at 36 if Wade is out, but he has not been producing. But he can get hot, and that might be the difference in a tournament if you need that cheap salary guy. And Monte Ellis at 6,300. He's been relatively consistent lately, almost a 30-point guy on most nights, but not sure that he's really moving the needle enough for me. At small forward, Luol Deng at 5,700, easily surpassing that the last couple of games. The matchup against Paul George is not ideal, but I'm still, especially if Wade is out, Deng is getting smashed at 5,700. Justice Winslow is at 4,100. Just doesn't do enough for me. I'll leave him alone. And 8,700 for Paul George. This is not a good matchup with Deng and with Winslow on him. For as good as George is, he is quite volatile with his numbers. And at 8,700, I want less volatility. I reckon you can spend that better, spend your money better in general. 5,600 for Miles Turner as the power forward. That's not an expensive salary. You feel like 27 to 30 is about where he's going to land on most nights. So I do like using him. The other power forwards listed in this game, you'd throw Josh McRoberts into a tournament at 3,800. He had a 40-point game, and then he had 11 in this one. So there is a lot of fluctuation with him. He's really only a guy you'd look at if Wade happened to miss, just because it pushes everyone else sort of into the rotation for extra run, but definitely not someone I'm overly excited about. At center, Hassan Whiteside was a 55-point guy in the last one. He's at 7,900. The Pacers are great at restricting opposition big men. Not sure I want to spend up on him there, especially when I've got 5,000 that I can spend on Jan Mahinmi, who's averaging 32 across the last three, 24 across his last five, had two real monster games recently, and the Heat are allowing big men to actually put up some pretty decent numbers. So not a write-off for using Mahinmi. The next one is the Boston Celtics and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Celtics are favored by 5, and the total here is a pretty nice one. It's 217. Don't worry about Kevin Garnett. Don't worry about Nikola Pekovic. It's unlikely we're going to see them. Nemanja Bjelica is questionable, so he's a guy we have to check on his status, but he's not going to have a massive impact on DFS values. Rick Rubio, he's at 6,800, so the salary is down under 7. The Celtics, recently, again, they haven't been quite as good at defending point guards, but the last couple of games, it's increased slightly. But at 6,800, Rick Rubio, 35 points is not out of the realms of possibilities for him. I wouldn't be steering completely away from him. On the flip side, his counterpart, Isaiah Thomas, 8,100 for Thomas. He's got a 41 average across his last 5. He dropped 46 today. He's had a 57-point game in his last 5. He's on a really red-hot streak. Love using him here. Marcus Smart at 5,200. He's averaging 23, and he's been really consistently at that. That's probably still priced a little bit high. You'd want him at like 4,500 or something like that. But just watch to see what happens with his salary, because he's been relatively consistent recently. At shooting guard, Zach LaVine at 4,900. Well, apparently he's going to be back starting in this one because it's the alternate game, but he started, the last time he started, he played less minutes than when he comes off the bench because Sam Mitchell logic. LaVine at 4,900, don't mind it. I think 25 points for him feels like a nice baseline. Andy Wiggins at 6,700. He's coming into a spot where that's not a bad salary, and against Boston, I don't hate using him. Avery Bradley at 56, yeah, probably not. And Kevin Martin, no chance. With the small forwards, Shabazz Muhammad, he's at 3,900. He played big minutes in the last game, 33 to be exact, and dropped 25 points. I don't want to use him in a cash game, but in a tournament, if they decide to run with that lineup with him playing more minutes again, I'm all for it at 3,900. He can get hot, but he's not a great cash option. He's definitely not a great standard league option either. Jay Crowder at 5,900, that salary just feels marginally high. It's a nice matchup, but it's just a marginally high salary. And 5,600 for Evan Turner, again, just 400-500 too high for me. At power forward, Jared Sullinger is probably the bigger name to have a look at here. He's at 6,000. He's easily been exceeding that, averaging 33 across his last 5. Love using him here. And Gorgui Dieng. Now, there's a bit of a risk because we don't know what Mitchell will do considering what happened last game. But if Dieng can play 30-plus minutes, he's got the Celtics' weak front court to take on. He's at 6,200. 30 points, you know, feels like it should be pretty comfortable for Gorgui Dieng, so I'd be all over using him. Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, not guys that I really want to be too excited about. At center, Karl Anthony Towns, 9,000 for him. The Celtics centers, this is a beautiful matchup. He's averaging 45 over the last 5. He's averaging 47 over his last 3. Even if he only gets you 42 or 43, I reckon you'd be pretty happy. And he's got 50-60 point upside. Tyler Zeller, we don't need to be too worried about you. The next game is where I think a lot of the fantasy value from the day is going to come, and that is the Lakers and the Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 8. The total here is 205.5 points. So it's not always just about looking at the high totals. It's about looking at the individual matchups. John Henson hasn't resumed practicing. Unlikely that he'll play. Jared Bayless looks like he's going to be out for a relatively significant amount of time with his knee problem. Point guards. I like both the Lakers guys. D'Angelo Russell at 4,900, dropped 26 today. I think that's almost the bottom level of his value. Jordy Clarkson at 5,900. He's been smashing 35, 36 points most nights recently. At 5,900, love both these guys. Now, the Bucks are a pretty good defensive unit against point guards, but I'm not. Well, Clarkson's more of a shooting guard now anyway. But I'm at Russell's salary of sub 5,000. I'm not worried about that impact of the defense having too much negative correlation to him. Or not negative correlation, negative impact. Michael Carter-Williams at 6,200. You don't hate it, especially if Bayless is out. It's not bad heading up against the Lakers. He dropped 38 in that double overtime game against the Hawks. I think you can do better than using him. I would much rather spend the 300 less and use Jordan Clarkson. At shooting guard, OJ Mayo is at 3,800. He dropped 33 points in the last game in 38 minutes. Now, he won't play 38 minutes, but if he's going to get 28 to 29 minutes at 3,800, love it for a cash game. For a tournament. Chris Middleton at 7,600, averaging 40 over his last 3. Perfect matchup against the Lakers. He should be in a lot of lineups. 6,600 for Kobe. The minutes have been down for him the last couple, which apparently is going to be a trend. Not sure I want to spend 66 on him. And Lou Williams in a bench role now, no thanks. With the small forwards, Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7,500. He's been averaging in excess of 37 points over his last three games. He's playing against the Lakers. This has got Giannis 40-point upside written all over it. At power forward, Jabari Parker at 5,500, just getting a shit ton of minutes and putting up big stats as well, averaging 38 over his last three. At 55 against the Lakers, it's hard to go wrong. Also, Brandon Bass at 3,700. Now, I talked about him before from standard league point of view, but 3,700 for DFS with the guy averaging over 21 points in his last three, it's pretty nice. He's getting 25, 26, 27 minutes on most nights, and he's producing. Love it. 6,300 for Julius Randle. He needs big points and big rebounds for that really to come to fruition, and it feels maybe a little bit difficult. I don't really trust him for a cash game. I would throw him into a tournament, but the cash game reliability is not there for me. Greg Monroe at 7,900. I don't want to spend up for him at that price, although the matchup against the Lakers is nice, but I don't want to spend on him here. And Miles Plumlee, who will likely play in place of John Henson, is at 3,600, but he's just not doing enough for me. The Golden State Warriors and the Atlanta Hawks is a pretty decent fantasy spot as well. The Warriors are favored by 7.5 on the road. The total is massive. It's 223.5 points. We need to check, obviously, on the status of Andrew Bogut for the Warriors. He's dealing with a sore Achilles. If he doesn't play, does recently signed Anderson Varejao play? I don't think, or if he does, he's not going to have much fantasy impact. And on the Hawks side of things, Jeff Teague dealing with that wrist problem that allowed Dennis Schroeder to go nuts in the last game. That was the reason that Schroeder went nuts. It was not them replacing Teague with Schroeder. It was all wrist related, and Teague said that he's fine. So I'm not concerned, and it's why I've been a little bit sour on adding Schroeder in 12-team leagues. Now for DFS, 6,200 for Jeff Teague. It seems high, but the Warriors have been giving up big points to point guards lately. At 6,200, can Teague get to 30? Yeah, there's a big chance that he can. I would throw him into a cash game and not into it. No, sorry, into a tournament, but not a cash game. And Dennis Schroeder at 5,200. It all depends on if Teague is still dealing with wrist problems or wrist pain or something like that. In that case, Schroeder's been awesome. He's averaging 26 over his last five, but he's still priced at over 5,000. It's not a great spot I wouldn't be using him in cash. No chance. Steph Curry is at 10,600. That is very expensive. This is a very good matchup for him, though, and I think the Hawks can keep it relatively close. This is an opportunity to use Steph. He's not a guy that you use in many DFS situations because despite his lowest score being 43 across the last five, when you're spending 11,000, you need him to do more than 43. Yeah, 43 is a big drop off from where he needs to be, but it's a nice matchup, so Steph can be used in this one, I think. At the shooting guard position, Kyle Korver's at 4,200. He's been back for standard leagues, but it's not translating into DFS points all that well. I'd be off him. 7,100 for Clay. Yeah, I'm all in here. 39 point average across his last three. Dropped a 51 point in game in the last one. Yeah, 31 across his last five. Not a tough matchup, all for using him. Brandon Rush at 3,600. He started in the last game with Bogut out, and played 27 minutes for 20 fantasy points. Strictly would be a tournament-only option. Even then, I'm not all that intrigued by it. At small forward, Harry Barnes, he just doesn't do it for me at all. He's at 4,500. He can't really get much happening, although he does have a 22 average across his last five, which is encouraging, and it is a positive matchup here. Maybe if Bogut misses and he has to play more at the four, I'd be more interested in using Harry Barnes. I think he's probably a better fit at the four. Kent Bazemore at 4,800. The arse has fallen out of Kent Bazemore's value significantly. At power forward, love both these guys. Draymond Green at 84, Paul Millsap at 81. Both of them have got 50 point upside. They've got almost a 40-point floor, it feels like. But over the last five, they've both had some stinkers. Draymond's had a 19-point game. Millsap's had a 25-point game. It doesn't mean that I necessarily think, they're only for tournaments, but Green is a guy that I tend to lean that way on. Millsap, I'm a bit more confident in cash games, but remember, they're not as rock solid as some of the other players that are out there. At center, Bogut, if he plays it, I'd love it, but we don't know if he's going to play. Al Horford at 7,200. Yeah, I don't mind using Horford here. He's averaging 34 across his last five. A 35-point performance is definitely not out of the realms of possibility for Big Al. The last game of the night, the Clippers taking on and hosting the Phoenix Suns. The Clippers are favored by 17. The total is 210.5. So the biggest thing we have to worry about here is it a blowout, and do the Clippers stars play less minutes? At point guard, Chris Paul at 9,900, sub 10,000. It looks beautiful. The matchup looks fantastic. But what if he plays 24 minutes? It's a real possibility. And that can be, it could be a massive pain in the ass. If you have rostered Chris Paul and he's at 9,900, that's a big chunk of salary to put into a guy. And then he plays 30 minutes. Considering he's been playing like 35 minutes on most nights so far recently, it's definitely not encouraging. I'll say that much. Phil Pressey at 3,500 for the Suns. He played big minutes in the last game. He projects well ratio-wise, but that'd be a tournament-only sort of guy to look at. And Archie Goodwin, if he's back in a bench role at 5,200, I'm not spending that on him. But minimum salary for Ronnie Price, tournament, I'd definitely look at it and think maybe he starts, or he should start. Maybe he plays 25, 26 minutes, and maybe he gets hot and gets 25 points. That just might be enough to help you build a solid team. At shooting guard is the next one. Bring that up. My screen stops freezing. That's beautiful. Jamal Crawford is at 5,300, so the salary keeps rising, but this is a great matchup for him. He's been producing brilliantly, averaging just under 30 in his last three games at 5,300, and he gets the Suns bump. Love him. JJ Redick at 4,800. It's a great matchup, but I'm less comfortable with throwing him out there. And Devin Booker at 5,200. If I'm spending that range, I'm spending it on Jamal Crawford. I'm not spending it on Devin Booker. For the small forwards in this one, Jeff Green, 5,300. We don't know how Doc is going to work him into the rotation yet. Doc did say something about we've got to let him get comfortable before we work out his role. That turns me off completely. Wes Johnson at 4,300. This might be the last game that he gets decent minutes. I'm not overly thrilled at 4,300 though. And PJ Tucker hasn't been producing anything lately at 4,800. I reckon he can be left alone. Same with Sonny Weems, Luke Marmute, and Paul Pierce. The power forwards, Mirza Teletovic at 4,100. He's a guy that I'd throw into a tournament, and that's about it. Same with John Lewis at 39, and same with Chris Humphries at 39. Now, it does all depend on whether Tyson Chandler plays. If Chandler plays, then all those guys get sort of knocked down my level of confidence. At center, if Chandler is out, I'm loving Alex Len at 4,600. If Chandler plays, then I'm obviously weary about using either guy. DeAndre Jordan, it doesn't bother me who plays or who doesn't. He's at 8,800. 40 points feels like it should be easily in play for Jordan, maybe even 45. So he's not a guy that I'm steering clear of. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, D'Angelo Russell, 49. Jordan Clarkson, 59. And Isaiah Thomas, 8,100. At shooting guard, OJ Mayo, 38. Jamal Crawford, 53. And Chris Middleton, 7,600. Small forwards, Shabazz Muhammad, 39, Toby Harris, 55, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, 7,500. Power forwards, Brandon Bass, 37, Jabari Parker, 55, and Draymond Green, 8,400. And the centers, Yan Mihinmi, 5,000, Robin Lopez, 58, and Karl Anthony Towns, 9,000. We are done today, guys. Make sure you're following me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball and facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Check out basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and subscribe to this podcast and leave a review. It would be fantastic if you could do that. I would be very, very appreciative. We are done, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.